Welcome to Torati Mechanach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Kosowski, and today we will be studying Megillat Esther Perek Yud, Chapter 10. Yesterday in Perek Tet, Chapter 9, we learned of the happy ending to our story. The Jews are victorious in their battle against those who sought to destroy them and celebrate the day they no longer have to fight immediately after their victory and establish the holiday of Purim to celebrate every year. Chapter 10 has only three verses. The first indicates that King Ahasuerus levied a tax throughout his empire and beyond. The next refers us to the chronicles of the kings of Madayu Paras, Media and Persia, for more information about Ahasuerus's reign and Mordechai's great stature. The Megillah ends with another verse which is read aloud together by the congregation when the Megillah is read publicly on Purim. Ki Mordechai ha-Yehudi, Mishneh la-Melech Ahasuerosh, v'gadol la-Yehudim, v'ratzoi l'rov echav, doresh tov la-amo, v'dover shalom l'chol zaro. For Mordechai the Jew was second to the king Ahasuerosh, great amongst the Jews, beloved by most of his brothers, a seeker of good for his nation, and speaker of peace for all his offspring. It is not entirely obvious what these three psukim add to the story and why they are at the end of the Megillah. Dat Mikra suggests that it is a way of ending the story the way it began, with a description of Ahasuerus, part of the mirror image which we have seen as the overall structure of the Megillah. This time, however, Mordechai's greatness is noted alongside that of Ahasuerus, once again highlighting the reversal of fate for the Jews. When Ahasuerus is first introduced in chapter 1, verse 1, we are told who Ahasuerus. He was Ahasuerus. The Gemara in Megillah Yud Aleph Amud Aleph, page 11a, comments, Hu birisho mitchilato v'yad sofo. He in his wickedness from beginning to end. Citing this line in his book, Kidvuni Ledorot, Rav Yehoshua Bachrach notes that at the beginning of the book, Ahasuerus makes parties to win over the favor of his people, whereas at this point, he's much more heavy-handed, showing his power through taxation. Rav Bachrach cites the book Manot HaLevi, which suggests that these verses show that this great success of Ahasuerus at the end of the book is due to Mordechai, the Jew, hit Mordechai's efforts on his behalf. V'chol asher hu osa Hashem matzliach biyado. Hashem brought success to Mordechai's endeavors. Many commentators focus on the phrase in the last pasuk, verse 3, in which Mordechai is described as Ratzoi l'rov echav, beloved by most of his brothers. Why not all his brothers? Ibn Ezra says simply that no one can be beloved by all because of jealousy. Rav Bachrach cites Rav Yosef Karo as saying that some Jews blamed Mordechai for putting them in danger in the first place by starting up with Haman. Rashi suggests that some of the Sanhedrin rejected Mordechai because his political position pulled him away from Torah learning. On the other hand, Dat Mikra points out that this last verse highlights what we want from Jews who rise to power in a foreign court. He never distanced himself from the Jewish people and always advocated on their behalf. I would like to use the rest of our time today to think about Megillat Esther as a whole and highlight some of its messages. We began our study of Megillat Esther noting that one could argue that it is an unlikely candidate to be one of our Sifrei Kodesh, our holy books of Tanakh. Set in the Persian court, with barely a mention of Israel and the Jews having assimilated into Persian culture, the Megillah includes drunken parties, a heroine who intermarries, and most notably, no mention of Hashem. I believe that the Megillah is written this way intentionally for us, and is arguably the most contemporary book of Tanakh because of how the story is told. We, too, live in a time in which many Jews are assimilated, in which many of us have chosen to live in Galut in the diaspora instead of having made Aliyah. No one nowadays taps us on the shoulder and points out the hand of God in the unfolding of world events. We have to look for it ourselves. Much of what happens in Megillat Esther has happened again and again throughout Jewish history, and as well as all too recently. Logically, we would expect assimilation of the Jews to lead to a decrease in anti-Semitism. In Megillat Esther and throughout history, we see the opposite. Sometimes it takes an enemy from the outside to remind us who we truly are. We have seen echoes of Amalek in the Megillah, and this idea of spiritual weakness leading to an outside attack goes back to our first encounter with Amalek in the Midbar in the wilderness soon after the Exodus from Egypt. In Parshat Bishalach, Shmot Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17, the people run out of water and fight with Moshe. They are miraculously given water, and the place is named Masa Umiriva. Al Riv B'nai Yisrael Va'al Nasotamat Hashem Lemor, Hayesh Hashem Bikurbeinu Im Ayin. For the fight of the people of Israel and for testing Hashem, saying, is Hashem in our midst or not? Immediately in the next Pasuk, verse 8, Amalek attacks. The cycle of spiritual weakness or assimilation leading to anti-Semitic threats is highlighted in the Megillah. Megillat Esther also provides an example of how to respond to these threats. After Yehoshua successfully defeats Amalek in Shmot Perek Yud Zayin, chapter 17, the chapter ends by indicating Milchama l'Hashem ba'Amalek midor dor. There is a war between Hashem and Amalek from generation to generation. Yet, when we turn to Parshat Zachar and Sefer Dvarim Perek Kaf Hei, chapter 25, we are instructed in verse 19, Timchat Zechar Amalek, you should erase the memory of Amalek. Whose war is it? Hashem's war or our war? The answer is both. We learn from Mordechai and Esther that we have to do our part. We have to do our part spiritually, and we also have to do our part politically and militarily. We see all of these efforts on their part, and we understand from the way the story is told that their efforts are only successful because of the role Hashem plays. So why not say that directly? Why is Hashem's role hidden in the Megillah? This is what makes Megillat Esther so contemporary, so like our lives today. Hashem is hidden in our world, and it is our job to uncover his presence. Particularly in Galut, in exile, it is often hard to see Yad Hashem, the hand of God. In a shiur online on Yeshivat Haaretzion's virtual Beit Midrash, Rabbi Yehuda Amital characterizes Amalek as representing an ideology of mikriyut, viewing events as random or purposeless. The root word kara, or happenstance, is seen in Dvarim Kaf Hei Yud Chet, chapter 25, verse 18, when Amalek is described as Asher karcha baderech, they happened upon you on the way. Rav Amital contrasts the Jewish people with an ideology of baderech, being on the way with a purpose, to this rejection of purpose and meaning. He suggests that calling the holiday Purim based on the lottery highlights the ideology of Amalek that things happen by chance. Megillat Esther challenges us to find Hashem's role, to look for and connect the dots, notice things which are not directly mentioned but are present when we pay attention. The entire form and content of the Megillah highlights events working out too perfectly to be coincidences. Just like nowadays, if we look carefully, we can see the hidden miracles in our lives. We have noted many parallels to the Yosef story in Megillat Esther. Yosef is constantly invoking the name of Hashem and crediting Hashem with his successes. Allusions to his story are another hint to Hashem's role in the Megillah, and also perhaps an indicator that as Galut, our exile, wears on, the longer we are in exile, in contrast to Yosef, the less obvious Hashem's hand becomes and the more we need to look for it. Another glaring absence in Megillat Esther is Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel. The Gemara in Megillah Yadalad Amud Aleph, page 14a, discusses why we don't recite Hallel on Purim in gratitude for our salvation. One suggestion offered is that we don't say Hallel for miracles which occur outside of Israel after we entered the land. Another answer offered as to why we don't say Hallel is Akati Avdei Achashverosh Anan. We are still enslaved to Achashverosh. This is perhaps another reason that the Megillah ends with a description of Achashverosh. If we take a step back, one could argue that the Jews are no better off at the end of the story than they were at the beginning. They are still subject to the whims of a narcissistic dictator. They are saved for now because Esther successfully maneuvered Mordechai into the role of Achashverosh's right-hand man instead of Haman, But just as the salvation from Hashem came in the blink of an eye, we could imagine, chas v'shalom, heaven forbid, the opposite occurring, given that the fundamental circumstances in which the Jews are living has not changed. The absence of independence in our land in Megillat Esther is highlighted by the precarious nature of the fate of the Jews in the story. Right in Megillat Esther, without reference to Hashem and without a focus on Eretz Yisrael, the land of Israel, painfully highlights their absence and causes the reader to look for Hashem and notice the ramifications of being in Galut, in exile. Megillat Esther is the book of opposites, not only in the sense of the miraculous v'nafahu, reversal of fortune in favor of the Jews, but also in the subtle satire of Ahasuerus and the Persian court as the opposite of our Torah values. It has been my pleasure and honor to learn Megillat Esther with you over the past 10 days. Thank you for studying together in the memory of our beloved father and grandfather, Ted Ordon, Mordechai ben Ephraim v'Miriam Golda, in commemoration of his 10th Yahrzeit. His family is forever grateful for his devotion to family, vision, courage, and optimism. May the merit of our collective learning elevate his neshama and bring unity and peace to Klal Yisrael. From Helen and Moshe Sassover and family.